and welcome to Press TV's debate. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. Paris in chaos as protests continue against the government and its economic policies. Riots have been taking place amid clashes with police and security forces who have been using tear gas. We're going to cross over right now to Paris and get an update on exactly what has taken place. Joined by Press TV's Ramin Mazahiri, who's been with me a lot of this evening. Ramin, fill us in on the latest information you have on what has taken place today.
Well, the authorities are saying 75,000 people across the country protested. That's likely an undercount, but the official count was 300,000 people 2 weeks ago and 100,000 people last week. So a slight diminishing, but still a very, very strong movement. Today, as you said, was really chaos. It took place on the iconic Champs-Élysées Boulevard. 255 arrests, 95 people hurt. Tear gas was constant, water cannons despite December cold. This makes, going into this week, there were 620 people hurt, including two deaths. So we may have over 1,000 people hurt and close to 1,000 arrests in 3 weeks of protests. It was much more violent this week than the previous two, and it has really shocked many in the media and political community here in France. It was almost from the outset, we saw clashes between France's heavily armed and, almost encouraged to use force riot police. Macron said recently that he would not back down from the diesel gas tax hikes, which were sort of the straw that broke the camel's back. I say it's the straw because the Yellow Jackets have said it's not only about the diesel price situation. It's the urgent situation caused by 7 years of austerity budgets, with more austerity in next year's budget. This anti-austerity, anti-capitalist point of view explains why banks were attacked across France, as well as France's stock market here in Paris. The Yellow Jacket protest is a leaderless protest, showing that it's truly a grassroots movement. And it's very hard for the authorities to stop or to buy off with concessions. There were similar protests held in Belgium, leading to questions of if this would spread across the Eurozone. The Eurozone has seen a lost decade of economic growth.
All right. Well, thank you so much for that update. That's Ramin Mazahiri out of Paris. Well, I'd like to cross over to Amsterdam. Welcome my guest, Professor of Economics and author, Debunking Economics, Steve Keen. Thanks so much for being with us. How do you assess what's going on? I mean, how serious do you see these protests that are taking place in Paris?
Well, I think quite serious for the viability of Macron's government, because he really came in with the en marche, the whole idea that he was going to transform the country and take it forward. He really only won because he was not Le Pen, and there was a strong, of course, anti-fascist vote behind his success. But his whole idea has been effectively imposing neoliberalism, which in some ways he believed France managed to avoid, as if the absence of labor reforms and so on was the main problem in France. It really hasn't been. That's not the main reason the economy has been slowing down. And all the burden he's been imposing of these so-called neoliberal reforms has been falling on the poor and the middle class and poor. And with the disposable incomes in France averaging less than 2,000 euro a month, it's fairly easy to eat into people's budgets to the stage where they effectively scream, "I've had enough," and they go on the streets, as French do when they're angry.
Now, we have seen, Steve, just the situation and everything with the demonstrators. You know, they started off basically protesting against, of course, the diesel fuel. But it seems that when people have talked to them on the street, reporters have talked to some of the demonstrators on the streets, that it's wider now. They're looking at the situation, the deterioration overall of their quality of life and the pressure that they have been under at least 7 years now. Your take on this, do you see this transitioning or not?
I do see it transitioning. I think if you look at the trend of economic growth in France, it's been declining from the post-war period right through the beginning of the euro, falling from what are seen as reasonable levels to sustain not so much economic prosperity, but people not being angry about the distribution of income. Right up till the beginning of the euro, it's fallen since then, and it's plunged into the global financial crisis. And now, People have been on stagnant incomes for perhaps 15 years, and they're now facing stagnant incomes with rising taxes, with Macron using these taxes, you know, effectively to try to address global warming. But the cost of that is falling upon people who use cars, and given the cost of living in France, in Paris in particular, the poor have been driven out to the periphery where they need cars, so they're the ones who are feeling this impulse. So I think this is really a scream of frustration.
I'd like to welcome my next guest to the program out of Paris, journalist and political analyst Laurence Laforges. Thanks so much. Understand because of traffic, we don't have you in the studios, but appreciate you being with us anyway. When we look at the demonstrations now, have been taking place for weeks now. Why doesn't the French president, Emmanuel Macron, address the issues behind these protests?
That is a very, very good question. And I wish he would answer it. He's hidden more or less behind the state and his administration, the fact that he's got his prime minister. And also he delegated the Minister of the Environment to talk to the Gilets Jaunes, the Yellow Vest, to negotiate with them on what this tax hike actually meant. So it appears that Macron's response is to try to make people ascertain that this tax hike is probably to adapt people to this ecological transition that he's been going on about now that he's been named the champion of the earth and all. So it may be that he's going to try and wheedle out of the situation by saying that he's actually just trying to champion the earth, but he's forgetting to champion his people, which is what they elected him for, even though only 16% of the electorate actually did elect him when you get down to the numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And that reflects the fact that he's not a popular president. He's perceived as the president of the rich and the president of the bankers. He came out of the Rothschild Bank where he worked before being in government, and people really do not trust this kind of going back between business and politics.
Right. Okay.
Since they're seeing that all the money seems to be going to the rich people and away from the poor people.
All right. Again, our apologies, viewers, that Laurence is actually not with us in the studio there in Paris because of the chaotic situation on the ground there. Lots of traffic and couldn't make it, so at least he's joining us by telephone. Now, back to Steve. When we look at the austerity measures that have been in place now for years, there's been a sharp decline in overall quality of life, which you talked about earlier. But what is the root of these problems? We look at various countries around the world. Perhaps they've been invaded, they've been in wars, they've been sanctioned, and perhaps there is a reason behind economic pressure. Why is Paris not able to sustain a higher quality of living for its people?
Well, it certainly had the high quality of living before they changed over to the euro. And my way of thinking, the problems in France, France is sort of halfway between Germany and Italy in that sense. The Germany's benefited very nicely out of the euro because it's got a huge trade surplus running at about 10% of GDP. Italy's running at about minus 6%, I think. France is pretty much 0 to 1 or 2% deficit. So it's been suffering courtesy of the euro, and these have been accumulating over time. The only way that there's been a redress of this to some extent is by more private sector borrowing. And that's been ignored by the Maastricht Treaty and ignored by Macron. But while he's been obsessing about reducing government debt and obsessing sensibly in this particular case about reducing France's carbon footprint, the level of private debt has risen from about 130% to 200% of GDP. And that is putting financial pressure both on corporations and people inside France. So they're being squeezed by their debt commitments on one side, which the Euro Treaty completely ignores. On the other side, they're being hit by these taxes and labour market reforms, which are weakening the one form of power they actually have.
Well, Lawrence, how much is being part of the European Union and abiding by its rules part of all this? As you just heard Steve allude to, and he talked about that, actually the quality of life has started to deteriorate, he feels, actually after France became part of the EU. Your take on the European Union and the role it plays, if anything, in the quality of life there?
Thematically speaking, your other guess is absolutely right. The cost of everything is dramatically, pretty much dramatically increased over the last 17 years since it was in 2001, I believe, that the euro was introduced. And it looks like there's been a financialization of the economy that was already underway since the 1980s, but it's just been speeding up ever since the euro actually was set in. So,
okay.
According to me, according to me, the French people should really look into what the European Union really has brought them, because it hasn't really brought them that much, but these taxes. And each individual country may well have been able to make the same quality in a more serene environment. I did not try to make this economic union, which was artificial, to begin with.
Well, what about this? I mean, both of you are actually pointing the finger towards the European Union. And Steve, if that's the case, I mean, if it's because the pressure is coming on the French people because of the EU, do you think that the average French person, French citizen, understands this? And if so, one would think that there would be actually massive protests, not only against Paris, but also against Brussels.
Well, I don't think you need to protest against Brussels when you've got Macron in power, because in many ways Macron was the golden-haired boy of the European Union. He's mm-hmm. somebody who fully believes in the Euro project. He's a pro-austerity. He's obviously coming from a financialization perspective. So he embodies everything that Brussels stands for in that sense. And I think the French people don't think they have any need to protest distant Brussels when Macron so much embodies what Brussels stands for.
Mm-hmm. And how likely do you think, that, staying with you though, Steve, how likely do you think that we'll be seeing more and more a demand for perhaps a Frexit, an exit from the European Union by French people?
Well, it's common to any country which is not a beneficiary of the trade surpluses generated inside the European, the Eurozone. So obviously Germany and the Netherlands and the Nordic countries in general are not going to be protesting about that. But the French are suffering, the Italians are suffering very severely, and that's why they've elected a combined left and right wing government, which is anti-European Union and anti the Euro. It is a failed project, and we're simply seeing the failures mounting up over time in the countries which have suffered from it, and France is one of those countries.
Well, Lawrence, do you think that these demonstrations will continue? And at the end of the day, do you think that they will accomplish anything?
Well, they're actually a peasant's revolt. If you look at it, there's no actual head to the movement. And peasant's revolt is historically just were an expression of the anger of the people. And generally, they stopped when the people got what they wanted or they got repressed. I should hope that Macron will not dare to try to repress the will of the people. And so I expect that he will give way. I should hope so.
Why do you think that's the case, Lawrence? Why do you think that he will give way? I mean, if we look at Macron and even his predecessors, and we have seen lots of demonstrations in the past coming out of Paris, but it seemed at the end of the day, no matter how much the people protest, it's as if the administration, the French administration, never heard them, because it appears that really nothing has changed.
Yes, that's not false. Well, you see, this movement is a very grassroots movement, and it's got the support of some 84-85% of the population.
Mm-hmm.
If Macron doesn't let up on his taxes and on the pressure he puts on the little people, the people with little income in France, the resentment is just going to grow. And this kind of movement is sure to go on. Maybe it will die down for a while, like over Christmas or something. Mm-hmm. But it will certainly pick up again in the future.
Okay. Well, what's your perspective on that, Steve? Because it seems that the society has become very divided. I mean, there's the elite, there's the ruling class, and there's the masses. Do you think that the French people this time around, though these demonstrations have a lot of support, but do they have enough support to actually continue and to try to get some concrete changes inside the country?
I think the most likely thing is Macron will back off on the excises on petrol. That's the easiest way to quieten this particular demonstration down. But obviously, he's not going to win the next election. And he has rivals on both the left and the right who are critics of the euro and critics of the European project in general. I think what's going to happen is that this meeting will probably peter out in a short while, but it will be a signal that when the next vote comes around, it won't be Macron who wins. We'll have yet more political turbulence in France, and quite possibly a right-wing government will come to power.
But Steve, let me just jump in real quick. Steve, you talk about the next time around during elections, but isn't it true? I mean, we've seen election after election, especially during the last few years, but really not the concrete changes that the people have wanted. Do you agree or not? Do you think that this will actually cause the people to become more disillusioned with the whole political system?
Well, Macron was a wild card. Don't forget that the previous leading conservative, you know, centre party in France was destroyed in the last election. Macron came out of nothing to win, and one of the main reasons he won was that he wasn't Le Pen. It certainly didn't have over general popularity. Now, he's been not Le Pen. He's failed in terms of his belief about his reforms leading France back to the path of prosperity. That's clearly failed. And in that situation, the French might now go back and revisit that vote. They certainly won't vote for the previous centre party. They won't vote for Macron either. That gives them either the extreme left or the extreme right.
Well, let's talk about that. That's a good point you've just made. What about that, Lawrence? Voting for the extreme left or the extreme right? The direction you see France going in, when centrist Macron seems not to respond to the people, and as our guest said, perhaps the people are more likely to go to the extremes. Let's talk about the possibilities and what that would mean, going to the extreme right or the French going to the extreme left.
Well, I'd say that there's already some of the extreme left that was present in the streets today. They're probably the ones that were doing all of the damage, or much of the damage, from what I gather. These ultra-left activists, some of them got arrested last Saturday, and got arrested this time around. As far as French politics generally are concerned, of course, there's the possibility that people might turn to the Rassemblement National or Mélenchon or even other parties. But one may hope that at the time of the internet, the people, especially as this movement was started on social networks, at the time of the internet, maybe the people will manage to pull the right information to present what they want to their politicians in a way that will make political opportunists have to adapt their own discourse. This is a popular movement, and I think we need to trust the French people to be able to organize themselves and organize popular assemblies and try and make this change happen, or this change at least move on.
Well, Steve, your perspective, if France continues to deteriorate and clashes like these continue to happen, and there's this class of people feeling more and more disillusioned, where do you see all of this going? What's the solution?
Well, a long-term solution for the problems of the European Union is to abandon the euro and go back to national currencies, or to bring in parallel currencies that reduce the damage the euro is doing to their capacity to stimulate their own economies. So that's of course not going to happen under Macron. There is no real political party that's putting that forward in France. You do have parties putting that forward in Italy, of course, and they are now in power. I think really it's we're likely to see some feedback from what the Italians attempt into what the French are going to consider. But at the moment, French tend to be very good at protesting and not very good at coming up with an alternative. The Italians, at least, have come up with an alternative thus far. And I think it'll be a case of the French looking at what the Italians do. And if the Italian economy starts to improve with its attempt to break away from the euro, then that might embolden the French to consider the same.
And Lawrence, 30 seconds, your take. What is it going to take?
Well, I actually agree with the other guest. There are very interesting things going on in Italy as well as in Hungary and even in the Czech Republic and Poland. These nationalist or patriotic political parties are on the rise, and they actually are the echo of much of the feeling, I believe, that much of the feeling of the French people, who are just sick and tired of seeing social contract be pulled to shreds.
All right, and with that, we're out of time. Appreciate both of you being with us, Professor of Economics and author Debunking Economics, Steve Kinn in Amsterdam, and journalist and political analyst Lawrence Tiforkas in Paris. And as always, we appreciate all of our viewers being with us on another debate. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Hope to see you next time.